Economic growth and development. Growing economies provide the means for people to enjoy better living standards and for more of us to find work. But what is growth, and how best can a country achieve it? President pledges economic growth as a priority. The president of China, Hu Jintao, had pledged that maintaining China's rapid growth is the ruling Communist Party's top priority. Growth has averaged over 10% per year over the last decade, transforming the country into a global trading power and one of the fastest growing markets in the world for many products. But the growth has been built on a surge in energy-intensive industries and has been accompanied by widespread air and water pollution that has drawn growing public anger. Growth has created enormous wealth, especially in coastal regions, but there has also been a sharp rise in the income and wealth gap between rich and poor in Chinese society, and great social pressures resulting from a mass migration of people from rural to urban areas. Source, adapted from the Financial Times, November 2007. What is economic growth? Economic growth is best defined as a long-term expansion of the productive potential of the economy. Short-term growth is measured by the annual percent change in a country's real national output. In the long run, growth is shown by the increase in trend or potential GDP. What is the difference between growth and development? The dictionary definition of backward development is to improve, to progress, or to grow, but economic development is not just about growth. Development is concerned with the improvement of human welfare within an economy, and so it encompasses such concepts as standard of living, cultural identity, and political freedom. The most common measurement of development is the Human Development Index. Dudley Sears defined development as the reduction and elimination of poverty, inequality, and unemployment within a growing economy. Under this definition, development is essentially about improving the incomes of those living in poverty. Amartya Sen, in Development as Freedom, sees development as being concerned with improving the freedoms and capabilities of the disadvantaged, thereby enhancing the overall quality of life. Development should be about increasing political freedom, economic freedom, and social freedom, and not just about raising incomes. Other measures of economic development. 1. The percentage of adult male labor in agriculture. 2. Combined primary and secondary school enrollment figures. 3. Access to clean water. 4. Energy consumption per capita. 5. Access to mobile phones per thousand of the population. In essence, development economics is concerned with the study of the causes of problems facing those economies where the majority of the population are in absolute poverty, and with finding solutions to those problems in order to raise the quality of life. Michael Todero specified three objectives of development. 1. To increase the availability and widen the distribution of basic life-sustaining goods such as food, shelter, health and protection. 2. To raise levels of living, including, in addition to higher incomes, the provision of more jobs, better education, and greater attention to cultural and human values, all of which will serve not only to enhance material well-being, but also to generate greater individual and national self-esteem. 3. To expand the range of economic and social choices available to individuals and nations, by freeing them from servitude and dependence not only in relation to other people and states, but also to the forces of ignorance and human misery. Note the emphasis on backquote cultural and human values, backquote self-esteem and freedom from ignorance. It is important to remember that economic development is about much more than simply achieving economic growth. The Human Development Index. The HDI forms part of the annual Human Development Report, and is a composite measure of economic and social welfare, that has three main components. 1. First, an educational component considers adult literacy rates and the combined gross enrollment ratio for primary, secondary and tertiary schooling, weighted to give adult literacy more significance in the statistic. 2. Second, a life expectancy component is calculated using a minimum value for life expectancy of 25 years and maximum value of 85 years. 3. The final element is per capita national income adjusted to purchasing power parity standard to reflect differences in the cost of living in individual countries. The HDI notably fails to take account of qualitative factors, such as cultural identity and political freedom. The GNP per capita figure, and consequently the HDI figure, takes no account of income distribution. If income is unevenly distributed, then the GNP per capita will actually be an inaccurate measure of the monetary well-being of the people. HDI is intended to allow economists to draw broad conclusions about which countries enjoy relatively high standards of living, and which are, by comparison, underdeveloped. Selected economic growth rates in recent years. We get 3 years' worth of GDP data in the table above. Russia suffered the deepest recession in 2009, with Japan, the UK and Germany also suffering deep cuts in real GDP. Developed countries as a group were in recession in 2009, but subdued growth is expected for 2010 as a whole. In contrast, emerging countries have seen growth rates dip in 2009, but there has been a quick and sharp rebound in growth in 2010. Brazil, India, and China have been at the forefront of a group of countries with supercharged economic growth rates. Chile. From developing to a developed economy. Chile, one of South America's most stable and prosperous countries, recently voted in a new president, Sebastián Piñera, a 60-year-old Harvard-educated economist. He has campaigned on being an entrepreneurial president, focused on the Chilean economy, which became a laboratory for free market policies like privatization under the Pinochet regime. In 1973, General Pinochet toppled the socialist government of Salvador Allende in a bloody coup and subsequently implemented the BRIC, so-called, because of the size of the manuscript, prepared by economists at the Catholic University of Chile, of free market reforms. Along with it came the Chicago Boys, market-oriented economists, many of whom had been educated at the University of Chicago under the guidance of Milton Friedman and Arnold Harbinger. Over the coming years, Chile became the outstanding Latin American example of market reform. Chile today. For much of the 20th century, Chile's copper-based economy staggered between boom-bust cycles. Today, Pinochet-era reforms such as a policy of privatization and low import tariffs remain in place. While Chile made the largest savings in the region during the commodity price boom, the country's dependency on commodity exports was equivalent to 41% of GDP in 2008. Overall exports in 2008 account for 47% of GDP, which was the largest figure amongst countries in Latin America. Over the period 1992-2008, Chile has posted Latin America's fastest economic growth, averaging 5.3%. Poverty has dropped from 40% before the demise of General Augusto Pinochet's government to a regional low of 13.7% today. On the surface, Chile might seem an unlikely country for fast development, as it is so isolated on the South American continent's fringe. Chile's free trade agenda is accompanied by liberal social spending. It claims to have more bilateral or regional trade agreements than any other country, 21 trade deals, not all of them full free trade agreements, with 57 nations such, including the European Union, Mercosur, China, India, South Korea, and Mexico. Furthermore, over the past 5 years, foreign direct investment inflows have quadrupled to some $17 billion in 2008. The impact of more careful government spending has been productive. 40% of youths now go on to universities or other institutions beyond high school, authorities say, and 70% of those are the first in their families to do so. Sensible economic management not only helped Chile go from being a debtor nation to a net creditor, but also protected it from the global economic crisis in 2007. Chile was extremely careful with the flow of income generated by a commodities boom earlier this decade, and saved billions that it has used as a fiscal stimulus in the economy. As a consequence of this, its economy is expected to grow 4.5% in OECD membership. On 11th January 2010, Chile accepted membership of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, proof that Chile is one of the strongest democracies in the world. It is the first country in South America, and 31st overall, to be a member of the international organization. The fact that it has been accepted into the Paris-based club ahead of Brazil, the continent's emerging political and economic powerhouse, is a source of pride for the Andean nation. The OECD was established in 1961 with a mission to bring together governments committed to democracy and the market economy, to encourage sharing policy experiences and to promote economic growth and development. Such a transition from developing to developed country last happened more than a generation ago, for instance Ireland and South Korea. No one is exactly sure of the timing for Chile. But economists say this country of 17 million will become the first Latin American country to switch categories sometime in the next decade. Chile consistently ranks as the least corrupt government in Latin America, and under new President Sebastián Piñera one wonders if there will be many changes to the free market policies that have cemented Chile as a beacon of economic stability in the emerging world. However, there is no doubt that the private sector will be very prominent in furthering economic growth in the world's top copper producer, promising to revamp government businesses and introduce further tax breaks to create employment. In our diagram, we see how a rise in a nation's productive capacity causes the PPF to shift out, and this allows increased supply both of consumer and capital goods. Where the economy ends up depends on the decisions made about the allocation of scarce resources between products to be bought and consumed today, for example restaurant meals and holidays, and the production of capital goods such as new technology, plant and equipment and buildings. Advantages of economic growth. Sustained growth is a major objective of policy for most government. The aim is to achieve a rate of growth that can be maintained without risking an acceleration of inflation or too big a damaging effect on our environmental resource base. 1. Higher living standards, an increase in real national income per head of population. 2. Employment effects, growth stimulates higher employment. 3. Fiscal dividend, growth boosts tax revenues and provides the government with more money to improve public services such as education and healthcare. 4. The accelerator effect, rising demand and output encourages investment in capital machinery. This helps to sustain the growth by increasing long-run aggregate supply. 5. Growth and business confidence. Economic growth has a positive impact on company profits and business confidence. Living standards and life expectancy. We now expect to live on average 30 years longer, to work almost half the amount of time we used to every year, and to enjoy an array of new goods and services, including air travel, antibiotics, computers, and televisions. Economic growth and rising living standards has also meant a cut in rates of carbon emissions and natural resource depletion never possible in the 20th century. Benefits of growth for the environment. Growth can also create benefits to the economy, which could help protect the environment, such as more investment, innovation, and research and development, resulting in more efficient production processes to reduce costs. This could reduce the amount of waste and resources needed for the same output, and with viewed effects. Consumers and businesses also play a large part in protecting the environment. Attitudes towards green products have changed over the years, which have become the new in thing, from foods to clothes to cars. Firms are now showing off their green credentials at every opportunity, because there is a market for it. Toyota's Prius was the first mainstream hybrid, which became fashionable after celebrities in Hollywood started purchasing them, and sales took off. In the UK, Sainsbury's now ensures that its plastic bags are made up of 33% recycled plastic. Ethical consumerism and deeper corporate social responsibility when it comes to environmental issues has undoubtedly become more widespread in recent years. Disadvantages of economic growth. There are some economic and social costs of a fast expanding economy. The two main concerns are, firstly, that growth can lead to a pickup in inflation, and secondly, that it can have damaging effects on our environment, with potentially long-lasting consequences for future generations. 1. Inflation risk. If demand races ahead of aggregate supply. 2. Environmental concerns. Growth cannot be separated from its environmental impact. Fast growth can create negative externalities, for example increased noise and lower air quality arising from air pollution and road congestion, increased consumption of demerit good, and a huge increase in household and industrial waste. These externalities reduce social welfare, and can lead to market failure. Growth that leads to environmental damage can have a negative effect on people's quality of life, and may lower the sustainable rate of growth. Examples include the destruction of rainforests through deforestation, the overexploitation of fish stocks, and loss of natural habitat created through the construction of new roads, hotels, retail malls, and industrial estates. In the case of deforestation, it releases more CO2 into the atmosphere each year than all of the world's planes, trains, and automobiles put together. Globally, an area almost the size of England and Wales is cut down every year, releasing billions of tons of CO2 into the atmosphere, using up scarce resources. The world's resources are limited, and recognizing this fact, and trying to preserve them for future generations, is vital for sustainable growth. Our rampant use of oil has run many reserves dry, and each year it becomes more difficult to find new oil fields. Even water, which so many people take for granted, will become a scarce resource, like many other raw materials. According to the United Nations, by 2025 1.8 billion people will be affected by water scarcity. The pollution caused by economic growth is another concern. The Stern report published in 2006 highlighted the potential dangers of our blatant disregard for the environment, especially our large amounts of CO2 emissions. It is also predicted that many species will become extinct as forests and jungles, homes for many animals, are cut down to pave way for the growing world population. At present, 16,000 species are threatened today. In 1900, according to the UN's Global Environmental Outlook, there were 7.91 hectares per person, while it is estimated that there will only be 1.63 by 2050, if present trends continue. Economic growth and inequality. Not all of the benefits of growth are evenly distributed. A rise in real GDP can often be accompanied by widening income and wealth inequality in society, that is reflected in an increase in relative poverty. The Gini coefficient is one way to measure the inequalities in the distribution of income and wealth in different countries. The higher the value for the Gini coefficient, the maximum value is 1, then greater the inequality. Countries such as Japan, Denmark, and Sweden typically have low values for the Gini coefficients, whereas African and South American countries have an enormous gulf between the incomes of the richest and the poorest element of the population. A good example of the uneven spread of the benefits from growth is the enormous wealth gap in China. Trend growth or underlying growth. The trend or underlying rate of growth is the long-run average rate for a country over a period of time. Measuring the trend requires a long-run series of data to identify the different stages of the economic cycle, and then calculate average growth rates from peak to peak, or trough to trough. Another way of thinking about the trend growth rate is to view it as a safe speed limit for the economy. In other words, an estimate of how fast the economy can reasonably be expected to grow over a number of years without creating an increase in inflationary pressure. Above trend growth positive output gap. If the economy grows too quickly, much faster than the trend, then aggregate demand will eventually exceed long-run aggregate supply, and lead to a positive output gap emerging. There is excess demand in the economy. This can lead to demand pull and cost push inflation. Below trend growth negative output gap. If the economy experiences a sustained slowdown or recession, that is, growth is well below the trend rate, then output will fall short of potential GDP, leading to a negative output gap. The result is downward pressure on prices and rising unemployment because of a lack of aggregate demand. For the UK, the trend rate of growth is estimated to be close to 2.5% per year, although there are signs that our long-term growth rate is declining. Trend growth is higher for many emerging market countries that are enjoying rapid growth and major economic change. The BRIC nations. BRIC is an acronym that refers to the fast-growing developing economies of Brazil, Russia, India, and China. They already account for 15% of global GDP, more than half the size of the US. China has overtaken Germany, and is about to overtake Japan in the next year or so. The acronym was first coined and prominently used by Goldman Sachs in 2001. The four countries, combined, currently account for more than a quarter of the world's land area and more than 40% of the world's population. The effects of an increase in long-run aggregate supply are traced in the diagram below. Potential output depends on the following factors. 1. The growth of the labor force, those people able, available, and willing to find employment. The government has invested in a number of schemes designed to raise employment, including reforms to the tax and benefit system. Changes in the age structure of the population also affect the total number of people seeking work. And we must also consider the effects that migration of workers into the UK from overseas, including the newly enlarged European Union, can have on our total labour supply. 2. The growth of the nation's stock of capital, driven by the level of fixed capital investment. 3. The trend growth of productivity of labour and capital. For most countries, it is what happens to productivity that drives the long-term growth. The causes of improved efficiency come from making markets more competitive, and achieving increased output per work within individual plants and factories. 4. Technological improvements reduce the costs of supplying goods and services, which leads to an outward shift in a country's production possibility frontier. Case study: Can China maintain her rapid economic growth? Chinese growth has been revised upwards to 9.5% in 2010 by the World Bank. If it achieves that rate of growth, it will overtake Japan to become the second largest economy in the world. If it can sustain that rate of growth, then it will be catching the US by the mid-2030s. But how sustainable is it? This article considers some of the factors which may cause future Chinese growth to be more sedate. The Chinese growth has been based heavily on exports, which in turn rely on sustained demand from the West. Factors which could cause a reduction in this demand would have serious implications for the Chinese. Guangzhou contributes about a third of Chinese exports, and the economic crisis saw 3 million workers lose their jobs as manufacturing firms closed. A slow recovery of the developed economies would damage Chinese exports. There is also a lot of international pressure on China to allow the yuan to appreciate, and should China yield to such pressure, their exports are likely to see a reduction in international competitiveness. More fundamental economic arguments exist though. Firstly, one could consider the lack of innovation and technological progress generated by the Chinese. Despite some improvement, the amount of patent applications from China in 2008 was only 1874. In the US, there were more than 90,000 applications. The argument here is that China is merely using technology already invented to close the gap on the West. This form of growth is inherently limited. Eventually the Chinese will catch up with the technology level of the West and there will be no gap to exploit. A similar argument applies to the labor market. China has been able to take advantage of low average wage levels to attract investment for many years. Manufacturing wages in China are now higher than in Vietnam, India, and Indonesia. As the wage level rises in the Chinese cities, international firms are increasingly looking to other countries for their low-wage manufacturing. It must also be suggested that the political situation will limit future development. The managed economy can be very effective at providing rapid economic growth when there are numerous significant infrastructure projects to employ lots of people, but it is unlikely to provide such positive effect once entrepreneurship becomes a driving factor. In addition, one could point to other weaknesses in the Chinese systems, which may limit the future potential for growth. China is a cash-driven society. Individual debt is significantly lower than in more developed countries. There are both demand and supply-side explanations for this. Firstly, the cultural history of China dissuades people from having debt as it is viewed as a blot on a person's reputation. And following many years of state-directed lending, the main banks in China have suffered from very high levels of non-performing loans. Government efforts to liberalize and reform the banking sector have been successful to an extent, but there is still a lack of effective creditworthiness tests which makes banks reluctant to lend. 101B 2A 2B 2C 3A 3B 4A 4B 4C 4D 5A 5B 5C 6A 6B 6C 7A 7B 7C 7D 7E 8A 8B 9A 10A 10B 11A 11B 11C 11D. So what could all of this point to? Conceivably, China could start to approach its potential output, and without further technological innovation, further growth could be restricted to the growth rates seen in the West. In addition, a lack of credit within China, combined with reduced levels of government spending on infrastructure projects, FDI and export income could limit the growth of aggregate demand.